one because there are some amendments to that, and that will be heard at a later date. We're not sure when, but if you're here for Senate Bill 41, it will not be heard. So we will open a public hearing on...
Let's just do this. Get it over here. Join the work session.
Well,
for purposes of committee bills.
Well, okay. We can do that. Yeah. Okay. We do have... Have you had a chance to look at that?
No.
I'm looking. Okay. As long as you've had a chance to look at it, that's fine.
Yeah.
Okay. We have it. We're going to go into work session for purposes of introducing a committee bill.
Mr. Chair, I move LC 2337 be introduced as a committee bill.
Okay. Senator Cruz moves that LC 2337 be introduced as a committee bill. Discussion? Objections? Seeing none? So ordered. Okay.
That one we don't forget.
Okay. Now, the main event. We'll open a public hearing on Senate Bill 184. And would you like to give a detail, a short detail, just a little tiny detail?
Senate Bill 184 directs the Oregon Department of Administrative Services to transfer 2% of gross revenues derived from sales of distilled liquors to the Mental Health, Alcoholism, and Drug Services Account.
Okay, and so we will call up Aaron Kelly Seals, and where's the other guest? Oh, Steve Farrell and Michael O'Connor, if you would please come. Thank you. Welcome.
Chair Morissette, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Erin Kelly Seal, and I am the Governor's Policy Advisor on Human Services. Thank you for the opportunity to testify today in support of one of the Governor's priority pieces of legislation, Senate Bill 184. We've assembled several experts to fill you in on the detail of the bill and the policy it supports, so I'll try to be very brief. As you know, the governor has made children and families and their families a top priority since taking office in 2003. In the last two biennia, that's been a real challenge because of the budget situation. And despite some very real progress, such as the effort to reduce meth production in Oregon, the governor and the legislature, I think, have recognized that to truly get out in front of the challenges our society is facing when it comes to alcohol and drug abuse, we need to have a comprehensive approach to drug and alcohol addiction, an approach that includes investing in keeping children safe and families strong. That's really what Senate Bill 184 is about. Senate Bill 184 would dedicate 2% of Oregon's total gross liquor revenue to targeted addiction prevention and treatment services benefiting Oregon's children and families. I say targeted because these revenues will go specifically to programs designed to do two things. First, keep children at home when they can be safe with their families. And second, reduce our underage drinking rates so that Oregon's children and adolescents are able to take full advantage of the educational opportunities that they're offered. The 2% dedication in Senate Bill 184 will generate approximately $17 million in revenue next biennium to spend on more treatment for children and families at risk of entering or already in the child welfare system, more drug courts to focus on keeping families in the system together, and more resources for communities to keep kids from drinking in the first place. Through collaboration across agencies and across programs, that money just won't be spent on outputs like number of people served, but on real outcomes like reducing the amount of time kids spend in foster care and increasing the number of families in the system who are reunified. Senate Bill 184 represents an opportunity for Oregon to send the message that funding for prevention and treatment is a priority. I would note also just that Senate Bill 184 was very carefully constructed with the current recipients of liquor revenues in mind, effectively holding harmless the level of increase those recipients have received for the last five biennia from this revenue source. Before I turn it over to Michael to walk you through the OLCC revenue collection and distribution, I just want to say thank you to the chair for hearing the bill and also to each of you because this committee really is comprised of many advocates for this issue area, so it's really a privilege to be before you with this piece of legislation. Thank you very much.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chairman and members. For the record, my name is Michael O'Connor. I'm the Director of Financial Services for the Liquor Control Commission. I'm appearing before you today to discuss the primary sources of revenue for the Commission and to describe the distribution of earnings, including the proposal in Senate Bill 184. The Commission has three main sources of income. These are sales of liquor to consumers and licensees, the collection of privileged taxes on the production or importation of beer and wine, and the collection of fees for the issuance of licenses to persons and businesses engaged in the alcoholic beverage industry. Liquor sales for 2007-09 are projected to be $852.3 million based on the governor's recommended staffing levels. Liquor revenue is collected by more than 240 independent contracted liquor agents who sell OLCC-owned inventory and deposit the proceeds directly into the state treasury account. Liquor sales continue to demonstrate significant increases in growth, as shown in the first graph of the handout. The governor's proposal will distribute 2% of the gross liquor collections for drug and alcohol abuse prevention. OLCC statutes require that at the end of each month, all net revenue is to be distributed to specific recipients. The second page of the handout is a diagram that details the cash distribution, including the current proposal, OLCC will make each month. The Commission collects all the revenue from its different sources each month and accumulates the funds in its state treasury account. By law, 2 cents on every gallon of wine tax is distributed to the Oregon Wine Board each month. The remaining beer and wine tax is divided evenly, with half sent to the Addictions and Mental Health Division, and the remainder is included in the Commission's accounts, along with liquor and license revenue proceeds. Under the proposal in Senate Bill 184, an amount equal to 2% of gross liquor sales, which is projected to be $17 million, would be distributed for drug and alcohol abuse prevention. From the remaining pool of cash, the Commission pays the distillers for the cost of goods sold. The Commission also pays for freight expense and the Independent Liquor Commission's compensation. The Commission then pays for all the operating expenses of the Commission. The remaining amounts are then distributed based on statutory requirements as listed at the bottom of the diagram. As shown on the next handout, OLCC expects distribution of revenues to total $336.3 million in the next biennium. The governor's proposal will provide $17 million for drug and alcohol abuse prevention, and beer and wine tax collections will provide another $15.2 million to the Addictions and Mental Health Division. The general fund will receive $170 million. Oregon cities will receive $103.2 million, including the revenue sharing amounts, and Oregon counties will receive $30.4 million. The final handout shows a breakdown of the actual distributions since 1990-91 biennium and the projected distributions for the next biennium for each of the recipients. Please note that even with the governor's proposal, Oregon cities and counties will see a projected increase of 12% in the amounts they receive. And I'd be happy to answer any questions you may have.
Questions?
Thank you.
Yes. Just one question. Thank you. I'm sorry I was absent for a moment. I'm just wondering why drug courts are not mentioned in the distribution and only in the back end. Basically, Mr. Chair, what you did in Section 2 was just do some language changes as far as the distribution, well, you made some of it set aside and, you know, for counties, but then drug courts are only mentioned in sub 3 on page 3. So are they part of what it can be distributed for because it isn't explicit in the other language?
Chair Morissette, Senator Cruz, when drafting the bill, we doubled back with legislative counsel to make sure that the definition was broad enough to spend the dollars on drug courts the governor wanted to spend, and we were assured that it was.
Okay, thank you. Just for the record.
Okay. Thank you. Thank you. Okay, Bob Nickel, Ramona Foley, and Craig. Oh, and Patty Finch.
Thank you, Chair Morissette, members of the committee. My name is Ramona Foley. I'm an assistant director at the Department of Human Services in the area of children, adults, and families. And I'm here to testify today in support of Senate Bill 184 and to share with you a little bit about how we see this legislation helping children and families involved in the child welfare system, as well as parents who are currently involved with self-sufficiency programs here in Oregon. While not all parents who abuse drugs and alcohol become known to the child welfare system, we have noticed a significant number of children who are entering foster care because of parental drug abuse and alcohol abuse. In federal fiscal year 2005, approximately 62% of the children who came into foster care had as a reason for entry into care the fact that one of the parents or both of the parents had a drug or alcohol problem. This is creating a great safety issue for children here in Oregon, and it's often cited as the reason children can't be maintained safely in their own homes when we have a Child Protective Services report. Access to alcohol and drug treatment began to decline with budget reductions back in 2003. In 2003, due to the revenue shortfalls, the alcohol and drug treatment capacity was reduced by approximately 25%. This significantly affected the foster care population in the state. From late 2002 until early 2005, our average daily population of children in foster care grew from 6,800 to over 8,500 children. And that would be on average how many are served in any one day during the year. During the same period of time, what was happening, of course, is we were having a reduction in the amount of drug treatment availability to parents. In 2000, if you were a child welfare parent identified as having an alcohol or drug abuse problem, you entered treatment 74.2% of the time. By 2005, the number had declined to 53.3%. And probably the most important point I want to make is that Oregon's child welfare program must begin investing services at the front end of the system, or else we will continue to pay at the back end of the system. For every child entering foster care, the state can expect that DHS's portion of caring for that child for 1 year in foster care is $16,000 on average. On the other hand, treatment for a parent will cost $3,000 to $5,000 per year on average. Senate Bill 184 will provide the needed resources to increase the treatment in our communities for Oregon's families. For child welfare clients, Senate Bill 184 will provide these more intensive services in order for us to keep children safely within their families and to return children safely once the parent has had treatment, if in fact the child has to come into foster care. The bill would support a range of outpatient and residential services for non-Oregon Health Plan families. As you may know, often a parent will lose Oregon Health Plan eligibility if children come into foster care, if the eligibility was based on the receipt of temporary assistance to needy families. So this presents a real dilemma for a parent who may lose their eligibility at the same time they're needing to get the residential treatment or outpatient treatment offered here in Oregon. The bill will also support additional residential services for families who are in the TANF program, the Temporary Assistance to Needy Families, and this will help prevent TANF families who have addiction problems from losing their children to the foster care system. And I think Bob is going to talk a little bit about what exactly this would be doing for these families.
Ms. Foley, I would appreciate it, Director Foley, if you could give us a copy of your testimony, please.
I certainly will, Chair Morissette. I think there is a copy somewhere, but I will make sure it is here.
Okay, good. Thank you. Thank you very much.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Bob Nickel, and I'm Assistant Director for the Department of Human Services, and I have responsibility for the Addictions and Mental Health Division. I want to thank you, too, for hearing this bill and giving us a chance to talk about the opportunities we think this bill would provide us. I'll follow up on what Ramona talked about a little bit with some background information, which I think many of you have heard, but just for the record. The Oregon Healthy Teens data for 2006 again showed 8th grade girls and 8th grade boys having a high rate of 30-day use, in other words, past use at least once, and also binge drinking. Oregon has about twice the national average for 8th grade kids drinking and binging. Girls actually have an even higher rate at the eighth grade level, 33% versus 30% for boys for past monthly use. Drinking before the age of 15, very likely to be, people who start drinking before the age of 15 are statistically much more likely to develop a dependent relationship. Youth in this state, unfortunately, tell us they find it very easy to get alcohol. And drinking, of course, is linked to other risky sexual behaviors, poor school performance, and increased risk of suicide and other criminal involvements, including homicide. And we're seeing an increasing proportion of youth entering residential treatment who are addicted to methamphetamine. So it's not just alcohol, but it's also now creeping into the meth area for kids. So we have an opportunity to address these problems with some efforts at prevention. We would support an additional 20 community coalitions. These are local lay groups that work in their own communities and neighborhoods to create different standards in their community in terms of what people, what parents in particular think about alcohol and drug problems, how likely they are to help their kids get alcohol, and unfortunately too many parents are involved in helping their kids get a hold of alcohol and having parties at home that are unsupervised and so on. We'd also implement an evidence-based family prevention program. Evidence-based meaning there is research that shows that this particular approach, which is called Strengthening Families Program, would be implemented, and we would do that in our through our county prevention coordinators. And the outcome of all this would be to reduce the onset of youth alcohol and substance abuse. I want to follow up again on some of Ramona's testimony. The average daily population, as she's pointed out, has increased significantly in the last 3 years at the very time when we suffered cuts. And we all know that none of us wanted to see these cuts happen, but still it's a fact, and it led to going from about 25% of families not being able to get alcohol and drug treatment if their kids were in foster care to over 50%. We have an opportunity specifically to work with the child welfare issues through Senate Bill 184. We would increase treatment and recovery supports for parents involved in child welfare or those at risk, such as in the TANF programs, in those issues. We would increase outpatient treatment capacity by serving an additional 2,665 families during the biennium. We would also increase our residential capacity for adults who need residential treatment, and increase also the capacity for those slots, those beds that we have in residential programs that actually allow the kids to come in as the parents are going through treatment. I think Oregon is very lucky to have several of those kind of programs, and we would use this money to increase the capacity there. Specifically, we would also develop additional recovery housing. Oregon leads the nation in the development of Oxford houses. We probably have 10 times the per capita number of Oxford houses. And many families who are going through child welfare have been able to take their kids into those programs. I understand through some other work that we've been doing that about 300 kids are actually living in Oxford houses right at this moment. We would propose to continue to bolster that very good program. Finally, I want to just talk very briefly, and then Ramona will probably follow this up a little bit. We don't want just to bring this money into the system and not very carefully commit ourselves to certain kinds of outcomes. And those outcomes are things like changing community norms, decreasing the availability of alcohol and drugs to minors, improve family functioning, show reductions in substance use and abuse among both parents and children that we would serve. We would decrease child depression and aggression. We would prevent out-of-home placements. We would reunite families. We'd reduce the average length of stay in foster care. And we would increase job placement and employability. And we've been talking already with our provider network. They understand very clearly that this isn't just money that they take. We will be contracting for outcomes, and we'll monitor those. So I think that ends the testimony that I have prepared.
Okay. Thank you very much. I did get your testimony and yours also, Bob. The data that you have given us is enlightening, and we will probably be revisiting this same information on another bill later on. But thank you. Patty?
Hi. Good afternoon. My name is Patty Finch, and I live in Oregon City. I'm a mother of two children. My son, Corey, is 17. My daughter, Sarah, is 7. The reason why I'm here today is I'm a mother in recovery from addiction to methamphetamine and other drugs. I had my first drink at the age of 10, and my drug use continued until I was 29, and I've been clean and sober for over 6 years now. So the first thing I'd like to say is thank you. Thank you for providing money for A&D treatment. Thank you for funding DHS with the people that help addicts get their life together and get out of the system. Thank you for giving me the opportunity to be clean and sober, parent, and a taxpaying member of society. I mean this sincerely. I'm a very fortunate person. You must know there are thousands of people who can do exactly what I have done if they are given the chance that I have been given. I see the power of treatment. I went through treatments at publicly funded treatment programs. I didn't get it the first time. I got it the third time. That doesn't make me a failure. This means the chronic illness of addiction is very powerful. Smokers quit lots of times before they finally stop using altogether. People at risk of diabetes don't always follow treatment their doctors lay out for them. People with heart disease are supposed to change their daily habits, but many of them don't. Chronic illnesses are tough to deal with. Change is very hard. But I am here. I'm parenting my children. I'm employed full-time. I pay taxes, and I work as an alcohol and drug outreach worker that helps people with their addictions. What I want you to know is that treatment is worth the money. It's very frustrating to not have treatment available for parents who are ready to make that change, like it was available for me just 6 years ago. Other people here today testifying can tell you your money is better spent on treatment than jails or foster care. I have my children at home, and I pay for my own. I have my children at home and pay my own way, and I am no longer on food stamps and off TANF. I don't know the details of how the legislature works. What I know is that addicts who are untreated cost a ton of money. Addicts who are in recovery not only save the state money, but we give back as well. I'm a good citizen. I'm a good parent. I'm a hard worker. That's hard for me to say sometimes because when using drugs, you think that you're the worst person on earth. I can honestly say today that I love myself. I can't imagine why anyone would not want to not vote to increase treatment so more people could get clean and sober. Now I know not everybody gets it. I've worked with people who need to go to jail and worked with people who should not have their children anymore. But that's not most of us. Most addicts can get clean and stay clean with the help of treatment. Being here today, I represent hundreds of recovering addicts who are clean and sober in my community alone. And even if it takes three times like it did me, it's worth it. By getting clean and sober, I got out of child welfare system, got off food stamps, and I'm paying my own way. Thank you again for listening to me and for providing the services we have. But please, for the sake of those people still out there using that want a chance, will take advantage of it like I did. Please do what is necessary to bring more treatment opportunities to people with addictions. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Patty. Appreciate it. Senator Cruz.
Yeah, and thank you, and congratulations. The only mistake is never coming back. Okay. Question for Bob. You had quite a broad list of outcomes, and I'm curious as to if there's going to be a prioritization and some meat put on those bones at some point in time.
Mr. Chair, Senator Cruz, yes, there will be meat put on those bones. We'll put these into our contracts. So as we do that, we'll begin to negotiate out what we think are reasonable benchmarks and progress, and we haven't gone into that detail yet, but that's clearly the intention.
Mr. Chair, as I was listening to that list, I was prioritizing in my own mind. I mean, there are some very clear and bright things that we can measure and probably have a higher priority than some of the other things on the list. So.
Yes, Chair Morissette and Senator Cruz, if I might respond to that question as well. I think from the child welfare perspective, clearly what we want to do, and these are very measurable, is have children remain safely within their own families by getting the treatment to the parent without having to remove the child. But for those children who have to come into foster care, getting those children to be able to go back home on a timely basis by giving the parent the service that they need immediately, those are going to rise to the top of our list, I think, on the child welfare and TANF side.
And, Ms. Chair, as you know from our work group, it's at the top of our list as well. So.
Thank you.
Thank you,
Mr. Chairman.
Yes.
Before they get away.
Sorry about this. The reason I was late, I had a sugar low going, and it might have been because of the presentation in Ways and Means.
Okay.
But if I could, it was OLCC. How appropriate we're talking about this subject. One of the studies that was in our preliminary, you know, our briefing information was the fact that the counties, the alcohol problem cost them 4 to 10 times the revenue that we send to them to deal with the problem. So we are impacting local government a big way, and many of them can't even afford to maintain their, you know, their efforts to get folks off of alcoholism. But the question, and I know you can't answer this because you got to represent the governor's plan. I'm going to tell you my position, and I am probably considered to be one of the most conservative Republicans in this building. This is inadequate. This is inadequate. And I think we need to do something about it. When we left that committee, two of us were on revenue, said we're going to do something about that. So,
well, we will revisit the issue with another bill.
Okay.
At another time. So just keep your promise.
I do.
And Mr. Chair, I might as well put my 2 cents in.
Senator Montefiore.
Conservative Republican.
I know. I mean, we have a methamphetamine epidemic. And when you, at least in the healthcare field, when you have an epidemic, you take measures to solve those problems. And so that's why I'm really happy. You're absolutely right. We have a whole lot further to go to before we can adequately bring people like
Patty
along. So, amen.
Okay, good. Well, it is a huge cost shift from treatment to the emergency room to jails to prisons to broken homes. That is a huge cost shift, and that is, you know, amplified each time we make a step, you know, to $58,000 a year for prison time is what, and about 75% of the people in prison have drug, alcohol-related issues. So it's a huge cost shift. Thank you very much. Thank you. Judge Graves.
Thank you, sir.
And Craig Pym. Yeah, Craig.
Might we appear as a panel, three of us?
Yes. Where's the other one?
Libby, come on.
Right up here.
Okay. Our, thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the record, my name's Craig Prinz. Uh-huh. We were going to try to keep on a time limit. I know you have a lot of
things. Oh, I think that's been shot already.
Well, we'll get you back on it. For the record, my name's Craig Prinz. I'm the Executive Director of the Criminal Justice Commission. I forgot to give the committee assistant these. I know you wanted the written. She would also like me to spell my name, which is P-R-I-N-S. So I'm the Executive Director of the Criminal Justice Commission. Senator Cruz left, but in 2005 we started a drug court grant program that I administer. We started with $2.5 million of general fund money and $1.5 million of burn grant money. Make a long story short, $3.6 million of this program would go to continue what was the burn grant, $1.5 million. Also, we would be able to start, we think, about 5 more treatment courts and be able to serve about 500 more folks with that. And so we believe that will reduce arrests and help to get people reunified with their kids. I gave you my written testimony and also gave you the outcomes that we track in the treatment court data system, and you'll see under the header, I think it says permanency, you'll see exactly the type of things that we think we want to make sure it's what you all want to have as outcomes, basically reunifying people who are suffering with addiction with their children. So with that, I'm going to hand it off to the panel, and then maybe we can answer any questions at the end. Thank you, sir.
Thank you.
Chair Morissette, members of the committee, my name is Dennis Graves, G-R-A-V-E-S. I'm privileged to be a circuit court judge here in Marion County, and my greatest privilege is to serve on the drug court as a drug court judge, having started that here almost 6 years ago now. We started as a pilot project with no funds and knew that people would come and that money eventually would follow, and we've been at our job now for, as I said, about 6 years. We work to see the Patties succeed, as you heard Patty testify, and you will hear Libby testify shortly. Our current population is 47 participants. We're using all of our funding. We were fortunately one of the beneficiaries of a grant through the Criminal Justice Commission this last legislative session. Our focus is on parents and children. In particular, we're partnered with the District Attorney's Office, and a priority is given for parents who are charged with endangering the welfare of the minor and possession of a controlled substance, generally methamphetamine. And so 98% of the participants in our court have children. We still have two people that were in court before we changed this focus to the focus on children and parents. And of the 98% who have children, 90% of those parents entered with children in foster care or relative care. And so you can see that we're targeting the population where we think the most success can result in a betterment for the lives of the children and a reduction in cost to the state. I can tell you that we have approximately 20 children from our drug court participants now that are living in Oxford houses, mentioned by Bob Nickel earlier. About 60% of our participants have co-occurring mental health disorders and are receiving mental health treatment and or medication. I can tell you that to graduate from our program, you have to attend a minimum of 1 year. You have to have at least 180 clean days in succession before you graduate the last 180 days. You have to get a GED if you don't have one. About 40% of the participants don't have GEDs. The only exception to that, if you have a learning disability or an intelligence issue that prevents you from being able to get the GED. We have not had one participant come into drug court since we've changed our focus who has not been reunified with their children while in drug court. Not one. We have had one graduate, however, who reoffended after she graduated and is now in Coffee Creek, and her children are in relative foster care. We have a 71% graduation rate after the 1 year. Our recidivism rate is 7%, and that's for any crime, not just a felony or a drug crime. It will be any misdemeanor. As you know, there are many that are lined up that we can't serve. One, because it's a matter of judicial resources. I receive one less criminal case per week to handle drug court. Drug court itself is a full half day. And so I take four less criminal cases in the month to handle drug court and all of its related issues because of the other business of the court. There's only so much of me. There are only so many judges that are available to do this kind of work and keep up with our other work. And so it will become a judicial resource issue at some point. I'm here to strongly advocate and support this bill. I appreciate very much your comments, those of you who are strongly supportive of treatment in this area. We can make a difference. We are evidence-based. We have statistics in the database that is maintained by the Judicial Department. We're pleased to share them with you, and we'd be happy to help more people if you'd help us do that. And any questions at this point, or would you like me to introduce Libby?
Go ahead and introduce
her. All right. This is Libby. She's a graduate from the Lane County Adult Drug Court, and she's here to tell you about her experience and what she's doing now in her life.
Libby, introduce yourself, please.
My name is Libby Shoopman. That's Shoopman. In 1983, I made some really dumb choices, and I got mixed up in the drug world. I was in this crazy and sick lifestyle for over 3 years, and I finally got a wake-up call. I got busted for meth, and I was able to enter drug court. By this time, in my addiction, I was pregnant, and I weighed around 98 pounds. I wanted to stop using meth with every fiber of my being, but I couldn't. I was a mom prior to getting pregnant, but my six-year-old daughter got in the way of my using, so I placed her with my ex-husband so she wouldn't be taken away from me. I could bore you with the already known facts that we have a meth problem across Oregon. My intent is to talk about a solution to this epidemic. I entered treatment as a part of drug court. I stayed there for 9 months. I gave birth to a healthy baby boy weighing 7 pounds, 12 ounces. If I hadn't been given the opportunity to enter drug court, I don't know where my life would be today. Almost 11 years to the day, I've been clean and sober. My clean date is February the 7th, 1996. Today, I work as a case manager for Community Action Program, and I'm a certified drug and alcohol counselor. I've been working in the field for almost 9 years. I serve on the local meth task force in my community. I married a great guy, clean and sober, and I have a total of 4 beautiful children. I share my truths with you today about what it was like, what happened, and what I'm like today, and hopefully show you that drug court and treatment works if we don't give up 5 minutes before the miracle. Thank you.
Thank you, Libby. Congratulations to you, too.
Thanks.
Thank you. Question? Okay. Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay, moving right along. Stephanie Scores Pump. Deb Gilmore and Bob Bovet.
I'm definitely in good company. Chair Morissette and members of the committee, thank you for the opportunity to speak to you today. I am Stephanie Suarez Pump, Vice Chair of the Governor's Council on Alcohol and Drug Programs. The Council would like to recognize the Governor and his staff for their leadership and initiative in recommending 2% of distilled spirit liquor revenues for alcohol and drug prevention, treatment, and drug courts. We strongly favor Senate Bill 184. The Governor's Council is a strong proponent of consistency in public policy. Oregon allocates beer and wine tax revenues for drug prevention and alcohol prevention and treatment, a portion of lottery revenues for prevention and treatment of gambling addiction. Tobacco revenues support prevention and cessation programs. However, Oregon does not allocate any revenue from the sale of distilled spirits for alcohol and drug prevention and treatment. This inconsistent application of public policy was first pointed out in the Governor's Council report called The Domino Effect, a business plan for rebuilding substance abuse prevention, treatment, and recovery, which I hope all of you have studied diligently. In fact, the Council recommended that 10% of distilled spirit revenues be allocated and still believes 10% is a reasonable, prudent business expenditure. The domino effect describes the consequences as they have cut across the system. Not only has the foundation of prevention and treatment been torn apart, it has happened at a time when the methamphetamine epidemic has overwhelmed the system's ability to respond. Access to public alcohol and drug treatment services has been reduced by 18% in the last 4 years. The Council estimates that between the reductions in treatment capacity and the 9.1% population growth, services need to be increased by at least 43% just to meet the existing need. Exacerbating the situation further is the fact that prevention system has been all but dismantled in the last 3 biennia. Rather than give the list, I have attached the list of services we've lost in prevention at the end of this. The losses have been experienced at all levels, state government, county services, and community coalitions. Dismantling prevention is a poor business decision and bad public policy. The Council wrestles with the fact that one of the most significant public policy findings we've made is the lack of support for the most cost-efficient step that could be taken to keep the dominoes from falling, fully funding alcohol and drug prevention, treatment, and recovery services. In addition to recognizing the Governor and the state for its support, after all, 56% of distilled spirit revenues are general funds, the Council would like to thank publicly the Association of Oregon Counties for its support of this policy. Their share is 10%. We would like to point out that the current distribution, which includes cities at 34% as well, will not change under this bill. The legislature has been concerned that taxpayer dollars are well spent, even going so far as to mandate evidence-based practices. What I fail to understand is the reluctance to raise tobacco and beer taxes when that step alone has been well documented as an evidence-based, cost-effective prevention practice over the last several years. So in closing, I'd like to encourage you to consider an increase in the malt beverage fee for the purpose of funding alcohol and drug prevention and treatment. As the National Academy of Sciences so ably stated, alcoholic beverages are far cheaper after adjusting for overall inflation today than they were in the 1960s and 70s. While raising excise taxes and therefore prices would have some effect on alcohol use by adults, price has been documented to have a differential effect on alcohol on youth consumption. As the domino effect conclusion section points out, Oregon stands at a public policy crossroads. Follow the science. Support prevention, treatment, and drug courts. Please pass Senate Bill 184. Thank you very much for your time.
Thank you. And I have my own copy of the domino effect.
Great.
And I've read it several times.
As you said.
Absolutely.
Chair Morissette, members of the committee, my name is Deborah Gilmore, and I'm the Executive Director for the Oregon Prevention, Education, and Recovery Association, also known as OPRA, which is the private treatment and prevention providers across the state association membership. What we do is provide alcohol and drug abuse and addiction prevention and treatment services, not only to the private sector, but also to a majority of the counties, and approximately 80% of the public assistance clients that are served through the members of OPRA. First, we support SB 184 and applaud Governor Kulongoski's leadership and recognition of the need for monies to go into alcohol and drug abuse and addiction. It's a devastating, devastating problem in Oregon, and has gotten significantly worse. For Oregon's uninsured and poor, it has become even worse. Access to treatment is very limited. They're put on long waiting lists, and unfortunately, it's had very devastating and sometimes deadly consequences. In recent years, the loss of funding to Oregon's vulnerable populations has, as you've heard here before, caused some exponential growth in some of the other services that the state provides, such as child welfare, the foster care system, the health care system, and the law enforcement system. And I will refer you also to the Domino Report, because as it states in there, the most cost-effective steps that could be undertaken fully fund alcohol and drug prevention, treatment, and recovery services. For every dollar spent on prevention and treatment, $5 to $7 can be saved in related costs ranging from health care, emergency room visits, law enforcement, and criminal justice in the society, and Finnegan in 1999. So OPRA respectfully requests your yes vote on Senate Bill 184, because we would like to see the future of Oregon's families become stable, and we would also like to make certain that our leaders of the future that are right now in our classrooms have the ability to live a life that is free of drug and alcohol abuse and addiction.
Thank you, Deborah. Bob?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Rob Ovette, here today as president of the Oregon Alliance for Drug Endangered Children, also representing the Governor's Meth Task Force. Both entities strongly endorse, unanimously endorse, in fact, this bill. However, Senator George, you are correct. This is inadequate. The Governor's Council recommended 10%. This bill proposes 2%. It is a good first start, but it is only a piece of the puzzle. So let me mention a couple of the other pieces of the puzzle. I believe you should amend this bill, Senate Bill 184, to take another 2% off the 56% allocation to the general fund and put it into something that we've been requiring school districts to do forever, but we've never funded, which is comprehensive statewide K-12 prevention programs. Very, very well, money well spent. So I encourage you to make that amendment. It doesn't even get to the 10% the Governor's Council recommends. It only moves from 2 to 4. Very conservative. I also strongly encourage you to pass, and I'm confident it will reach you. House Bill 2535, which is the Dingfelter-Morissette Malt Beverage Cost Recovery Fee. It is another important piece of starting the process of beginning to adequately fund prevention, enforcement, and treatment in the state of Oregon. And it is a key piece of our recovery from the meth epidemic and the underlying issue of addiction. I also would like to mention briefly that, We also have this issue about the state police, and I won't belabor it, but we have gutted the state police. And when we talk about a three-legged stool of prevention, enforcement, and treatment, we can't forget that the governor's budget has proposed to start restoring the state police to some degree. And I understand what he has proposed has not been met with enthusiasm, and that's fine. Let's find a different means if we need, but we need to start restoring funding for the state police. So I agree with you, Senator George. In summary, this is inadequate, but it is a key piece of our three-legged stool. I encourage you to pass Senate Bill 184. I encourage you to amend it to provide for comprehensive K-12 prevention programs statewide, and I encourage you to pass the Dingfelter-Morissette malt beverage cost recovery fee, which I am confident will arrive on the Senate side. Bottom line is lives and families depend on this bill and the other bills I've mentioned, and you have the power to save lives and families, and we owe the next generation nothing less. Thank you.
Thank you, Rob. And I want to correct a mistaken notion about the so-called beer tax. It's a cost recovery fee.
It is indeed.
Yeah.
And it's an incomplete one at that.
Right. Any questions?
I'm willing to support a call-in and a tax. So.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Andy Shaw. And Anna Peterson, Judge Daryl Larson. I don't know if Daryl and Ann are here. Anna Peterson, I guess you're not here. Joe Swinehart, Joe, you want to come up? And Libby? Oh, you've already had Libby. Good, okay, good.
Chair Morissette, members of the committee,
yes.
My name is Andy Shaw with the League of Cities. We're in the uncomfortable position of opposing this bill. Of course, we do not oppose the programs that are being proposed or the funding that's being proposed. What we oppose is the funding mechanism. SB 184 proposes to take more than 5% of cities' shared liquor revenue. That's because the 2% is taken off of gross liquor revenues and then subtracted from the distributions that are sent out. So the end result is a 5% reduction in what cities would otherwise get. From our view, this breaks an historic pact between the state and cities. In the early 1930s, just after the end of Prohibition, the state preempted cities' ability to tax and control the sale of liquor. Knowing that the state had taken away our ability to raise the revenues needed to address the effects of alcohol consumption in our communities, the state established a formula to share revenues with local government. I would like to note that those revenues are distributed to cities for general purposes and do not need to be targeted to any particular purpose. Nonetheless, we spend more on public safety costs that are directly related to alcohol consumption than we receive from these shared revenues. This fall, in conjunction with the OLCC and counties, we participated in a work group studying what we spend addressing alcohol use. The work group found that in every city examined, we spend more responding to DUIs, public drunkenness, minors in possession, and so on, than we receive from the OLCC. And that handout is the report that came out of the work group. Just note one city, Portland alone, estimated it spends at least $15 million per year and receives only $10 million from the OLCC shared liquor revenue distribution. The estimates that you have in the OLCC's charts show a 12% increase in the city revenue stream. That would give the city of Portland $11 million, so still $4 million short of what they currently spend. And those estimates don't include a number of areas that affect our community, such as domestic violence, where it's very hard for us to estimate the costs locally. Property tax limitations that restrict our ability to raise adequate revenues to fully address the impact of alcohol use, and because we are preempted, cities cannot further tax alcohol consumption in order to meet our costs. Now, this bill considers reducing these critical public safety resources that are available to cities. We respectfully urge you to consider two alternative solutions. One, increase the total pot of funds, which has already been discussed, for example, through the chair's measure. And two, instead of taking shared revenues from cities, you could fund these important state priorities from liquor revenues that are deposited into the state general fund. If you were to fully fund the program being proposed by the governor's office, the state's allocation would still grow by over $10 million in the next biennium, which is a 6.8% increase. We recognize the importance of these programs. We urge you, though, not to fund them at the detriment of cities, and we thank you for considering our very serious concerns.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, my name for the record is Joe Schweinhardt with the City of Salem. I want to echo what Andy had to say, but I also like to add that right now it's very difficult for cities to maintain the funding they have for the various services they try to serve. In Salem, we dedicate all of our OLCC funds to the police department. And if this were to happen, we would be in line to potentially lose a whole police officer for this. And I think what is trying to be done here is we fully support. But you've also got an enforcement side that's also the cities are responsible for. We think it's very important that you try to keep the cities whole and try to fund these through other means, as Andy has outlined. I think one of the things that's important here is to consider that cities are under attack for various funding sources they have. There's Senate Bill 10. There's been talk about taking some shared revenues to fund Senate Bill 10. So this may not be the only issue we have on the table for taking shared revenues. Only other thing I'd say is we support what you're trying to do. We'd like to see some other sources, and we'd like to let cities keep their funding so they can go after the bad guys, so they can go after the meth people, and let's get the people that need help, but not at the expense of trying to keep up the enforcement. Okay. Thank you.
Thank you. Questions, comments? Yeah. Senator George.
I guess probably for Andy. On page 4, you guys have a sample from Salem. For Joe, probably you too on this one. I'm showing what it costs just to process DUI. A lot of hours of staff, a lot of very expensive staff, a lot of expensive equipment. And I'm a little bit concerned. I would imagine that the number I used earlier, that your costs are 4 to 10 times, like the counties, above what you actually receive from us. Would you guys think that would probably be in the range? Is it probably less than the counties?
I think that's an overestimate. The counties were looking at a whole range of indirect costs in mental health and other areas. We were trying to, for the cities, just identify those that are direct costs that we can right. quantify. And in every case they were over, what we received, I wouldn't say it was four times.
Okay, they probably threw in mental health because I noticed back here they mentioned one of my counties and they were including mental health.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so if you added that in there, you might be similar. In other words, your cost is going to be substantially above what we send you.
Mr. Chairman, Senator George, that's correct. I mean, I think the cost is always going to be very high. It's always going to be more than what the cities receive. So this cuts into that amount.
Okay. As a former mayor of the city of Springfield for 10 years, I sat where you're sitting a number of times and argued for state support for cities. I've had a number of issues with OLCC and following the requests of cities in terms of license approval and so on. I've been concerned about loss of funding, possible loss of funding through room tax. I'm concerned about exemptions. This is a bill that does impact cities somewhat, but I also am looking at a broader view that the money will in some ways relieve the pressure on the law enforcement. Money does go to law enforcement, but there is it's a circular kind of thing where the money goes in and it impacts all parts of the system. And I guess what I'm looking at is the cost shift that, you know, goes into that. We don't put enough into the front end to defray the other costs later on. And so I see this as part of the solution to prevent people getting into the system, which is extremely expensive. The city of Springfield is going to build a 100-bed jail. That boggles my mind. And it's a very expensive system to lock people up. And I think that we do need to put the money in the front end, and I see this as solving part of that problem. And so I just want you to know that my heart bleeds for cities, but I just see this as something that we need to do. So I do appreciate your testimony.
Mr. Chairman, I don't disagree with what you're saying. I think what we're saying, though, there are other sources.
Yeah.
And well, that's what really needs to be looked at.
Okay. Well, we're also looking at other sources.
Too. Sure.
So,
yes,
thanks.
We appreciate that.
Yeah. Thank you.
Thank you.
You. Now, let's see. Janet Carlson. Gina Nickel, Judy Cushing, would you please come up? Janet, do you want to?
Sure. I'd be happy to start. Chair Morissette, members of the committee. I'm Janet Carlson, Marion County Commissioner, and I'm here today to support Senate Bill 184. I serve as the chair of the Association of Working Counties Human Services Steering Committee. Lisa Nato, who is commissioner from Multnomah County, chairs the Public Safety Committee. She was actually planning to be here but had a family emergency. She was in the building and had to go back up to Portland, so she sends her regrets, but she wanted to also express her support and authorize me to say so. We have a comprehensive strategy to address methamphetamine prevention, intervention, and treatment that we worked on for about a year as an Association of Oregon County Steering Committee. We see this as really phase two of what the legislature did in the last session, that there was a focus on enforcement, that there was a focus on pseudoephedrine as being a precursor, that there was some money put into drug courts, but there was not enough resource or attention paid to putting the families back together, dealing with treatment, dealing with the issues of foster care that you heard about today. In Marion County, we have, in fact, in 2004 and 05, we had more dependencies than Multnomah County, which has more than twice our population. For each meth house that has been addressed in Marion County, five, six, seven children have been taken out of home, put into foster care. We are working as a community to create receiving homes for those children who a couple years ago were going to Silverton Road and sitting in a cube until 2 o'clock in the morning with a caseworker until they could call around and get services for those kids. Because of community resources and our business community, frankly, raising the money, we have been able to create a receiving home that can keep those kids from 1 to 2 weeks. We did a jail survey in 2005 in the summer, and what we learned from that survey is that 71% of our male offenders and 89% of females are meth users. So meth is an epidemic. It's also an epidemic that strikes women harder than it strikes men, and women generally are the caretakers of the children. 72% of our male offenders and 80% of females were parents, and 72% of the parents had two or more children. So when you start adding up the kids, this is a huge problem, and you've heard about this today, and I just want to echo everything that has been said. We have a tremendous need for treatment, a huge lack of resources for that. We piece together what we can with what we have, but we absolutely need to have more resources to address this. Now, we recognize as the cities that this is going to tap into county general fund. However, we believe that the trade-off is worth it. Actually, on the paper that you received on page 10, you'll see that the Association of Oregon County's committees, our legislative committee, so the AOC itself, recommended this to the extent that it didn't reduce county revenues, but there have been increases in this fund over the last several years. I actually had my staff pull the numbers from Marion County. So the difference, for example, that we're estimating in this source between the current fiscal year that we're in and the fiscal year that we are going to be doing the budget for in the next several weeks, which is 07-08, we estimated an increase of $150,000. 2% of that is $23,300. 5%, if that's the actual rate, which I didn't realize, would be $58,250. So we're still ahead with the 2%. Now, we wouldn't necessarily want to go up to the 10% that you heard about earlier, but the 2%, I think, is fine for counties because it takes off of the increase that it doesn't dip into what we've been traditionally receiving in this fund. I would like to reiterate the comment that this is part of the solution. It's not all of the solution, and that we would like to see some additional strategies that are done in order to add resources for treatment statewide, and particularly in Marion County, which is where I am from. So with that, I will conclude.
Okay,
thank you.
Chair Morissette, committee members, for the record, my name is Gina Nickel, and I'm the executive director of the Association of Oregon Community Mental Health Programs. And as you know, the Association of Oregon Community Mental Health Programs represents all 36 counties in 32 different programs. We are responsible for the local planning and delivery of mental health and addictions prevention and treatment services. We ask that you support Senate Bill 184 as part of a carefully planned, comprehensive investment strategy. I know that seems like a theme around here, but we can't stress that enough. It really has been a planned bill. Local addictions outpatient treatment services lost $2.7 million, or 20% of our budget, at the February 2002 e-board. Another $5.4 million were cut in the November 2002 e-board, eliminating addiction treatment for Oregonians on the Oregon Health Plan standard. Another $1.7 million was cut in addictions residential treatment at the fifth special session in 2003. These cuts came on top of our already streamlined system. It's no secret, everyone knows, we have not kept up with prevention, treatment, or recovery needs. You'll hear this from drug court judges, if you've already heard, welfare workers, jail commanders, sheriffs. Everybody I know always calls and wants to know how somebody can get into treatment because there's just not enough capacity. These results cut across all of our systems, as you know. And in fact, the Addictions and Mental Health Division, AMH, estimates that we only serve about 12% of the adults that we need to serve and about 7% of the kids or adolescents that we need to serve. Our prevention system, I have to tell you, our prevention system is really hard for me to talk about because at one point in time, I was a county prevention coordinator, and we were nationally ranked. People talked about us in the late 1980s, early 1990s. And I'm embarrassed to say, looking at the statistics now, we have all let our kids down, and we really need to concentrate on putting back our prevention system as well as our treatment system. You have heard today from several people. You've heard a lot of statistics. I'm not going to repeat them, although I will if you want me to come to your office and talk to you about it more. I really want to thank the Governor's Council for their work on the domino effect. It really is a roadmap. But again, I want to reiterate that you should get very familiar with it. I want to thank the Governor and Erin Kelly Seal for having the boldness to put this forward to you. Senators, you have the power to take this to the next step. It's a carefully planned step. We would ask that you pass Senate Bill 184. We stand ready to support this system, and I'm saying it on the record, with performance-based outcomes that will prevent out-of-home placements when families can safely stay together, reunite parents and children, reduce average length of stay in foster care, and restore meaningful lives. Senate Bill 184 is a piece of the puzzle. Please put that puzzle in place. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Judy?
Chairman Morissette and members of the committee, my name is Judy Cushing, and I'm president and CEO of Oregon Partnership, a statewide nonprofit dedicated to prevention, alcohol and drug prevention, education, and treatment referral. I appreciate the opportunity to testify to you this afternoon in favor of Senate Bill 184. And I'd like to talk for a minute about an area that hasn't been mentioned here this afternoon. Oregon has a suicide problem. Our youth suicide rate is sixth in the country. Oregon Partnership operates the only statewide suicide hotline here in this state. We operate it 24 hours a day with trained counselors, 7 days a week, 365 days a year. That line is certified by the American Association of Suicidology, and it's the only suicide line in our state that is. I'm shocked and saddened to tell you that we receive more than an average more than 400 suicide calls a month on that line. It's frightening. when we began to do this, we had no idea. Why did we begin to do it? Because we were operating an alcohol and drug crisis line, and the majority of suicide calls are alcohol and drug-related calls, especially when it comes to young people. We are part of the National Hopeline Network. We are part of something called Lifeline. People can call 1-800-SUICIDE or 1-800-TALK, 923-TALK. And if they're calling from an Oregon area code, they're linked seamlessly back to our line. We have never advertised the line. We don't have the funds to advertise the line. Can you imagine what would happen if we did? People learn about it from mental health centers and from the Internet and from advertising done by Health and Human Services out of Washington, D.C. But the need is absolutely huge, and we've been operating this line on absolute pennies. This line is included in, or these services are included in Senate Bill 184. I also want to talk for a minute about primary prevention. You've heard from a number of individuals who testified this afternoon about the importance of prevention. What we know is that prevention is your most effective, efficient, and your very, very best investment to stem the tide of drug and alcohol abuse in our state. And it's especially effective when it comes to kids and families. But unfortunately, in the past decade, prevention has almost vanished from the radar screen in our state, just as Gina just told you. It's unfathomable when the best investment is prevention, where the best investment is we put the fewest amount of dollars. And as you heard earlier, our 8th and 11th graders in Oregon are now smoking pot at a higher rate than they're smoking cigarettes, and 1 in 3 8th grade girls has consumed alcohol in the last 30 days. This is absolutely abominable. If we think about prioritizing prevention, then we must think about where the resources are going to have the greatest impact. And Senator George, you are right on. 2% is not nearly enough. We propose 10% of the distilled spirits revenue be allocated to prevention, intervention, treatment, and recovery. There is another issue that's relevant to all of this that Rob Bovet brought forth to you, and that is I've been in the field a long time, longer than I care to admit, over 2 decades. And we have something called the Safe and Drug-Free Schools Act in our country, and Oregon schools do receive federal dollars, not enough to provide prevention programs. But we know at Oregon Partnership, from the calls we get to come into the classroom, that the vast majority of these schools are not providing consistent alcohol and drug prevention education. It's nearly non-existent. Why? Because schools have larger priorities today. They're forced to have larger priorities, whether it's achieving state benchmarks or no Child Left Behind mandates. Drug and alcohol prevention education falls to the bottom of the list. And more often than not, the schools aren't held accountable for what they're doing. And we need to allocate funds to K-12 prevention education and student assistance coordinators and counselors to see that we go back to the days that Gina was talking about and actually provide the safety net and the education in health classes and other classes in Oregon schools that our kids are so deserving of and must have. Our system is really broken, and it needs to be fixed, and this is an important solution to that. I do want to respond to the testimony given to you by representatives from cities. We understand the conundrum they're in, but we agree with you, Senator Morissette, that we're never going to be able to address this problem by investing more in the back end, way more in the back end than we do in the front end. If we invest in the front end in prevention and intervention and treatment, we're going to be able to save cities the dollars they're having to do in interdiction and in prisons. I urge you to support the allocation of a greater percentage, 10% of the liquor revenues to support prevention, crisis intervention services, education, treatment, and recovery, and leverage the dollars that are coming into the state. This is such it's an easy way to do this. It's the least painless way we've seen in a long time. We also concur with the forward thinking of the Morissette-Dingfelter bill that is coming for you, the malt beverage fee. Between the two, we can actually begin to restore prevention services, treatment services, and recovery services that we had a decade and a half ago.
Thank you for your time.
Okay, thank you.
Yes, just Senator Curtis. As we were talking, I was just remarking on, we did such a wonderful job of training that Carlson woman. She's actually quite awesome.
For those of you who are totally confused, Janet Carlson was the administrator for Senator Cruz's committee.
And then she was a representative in this.
As a representative. Okay. And she ran the committee in 1999. Thank you very much. Okay. Carla George. Yeah.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chairman and members. My name is Carla George, and I am from the Relief Nursery in Eugene, Oregon. I'm the program manager of the Access and Success Program, and the program provides recovery support and collaboration with treatment to increase families' abilities to stay clean and sober. I thank you for allowing me the time today to come before you and share my experience. I use drugs, mainly methamphetamine, for 12 years in Oregon, and what I can tell you is that during those 12 years, I took so much from my community. I ruined houses. I was lodged in Lane County Jail 42 times and cost my community thousands upon thousands of dollars. I gave birth to 3 children in my addiction and still wasn't able to access treatment. My children were in family foster care for 2 years. Eventually, I ended up in prison, costing my community even more money. During my time of using drugs, I was admitted into the hospital several times, again costing my community more money. I come before you today to plead for this bill to pass so that others like me will be able to receive treatment before costing the community thousands and thousands of dollars. After receiving treatment, which was 10 plus years ago, today I'm a taxpayer, a student at the University of Oregon, a member of the Governor's Methamphetamine Task Force, program manager at the Relief Nursery, and a successful participant in my community. I work with women on a daily basis who are in the same position as I was, who want to change but find a lack of treatment availability. Thank you for your time.
What an amazing success story.
Mm-hmm.
And you did very well.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. Thank you. Thank you.
And she's not related, I'll adopt her.
Oh. Okay. Wow, that's pretty impressive. Thank you very much.
I wouldn't take him up on it.
I'll put you to work on the farm.
Okay, good. Okay, so that's it with the public testimony.
Let's do this.
So we will close the public hearing and open the work session.
Mr. Chair, I move Senate Bill 184 to the floor of the Senate with an enthusiastic due pass recommendation.
Okay, Senator Cruz moves Senate Bill 184 to the floor of the Senate with an enthusiastic due pass. Discussion. Okay. Would you call the roll, please?
No.
We have discussion.
I still, I represent Gresham, and we have an extremely low, one of the lowest, if not the lowest, in the state of Oregon. So I truly do feel that cities, especially if you don't have a industry in your area and you don't have a significant tax base, that it's easy to pick on the cities. And so I need to get it on the record. I truly feel this is a well-crafted piece of legislation, but we also need to realize that the cities, especially those without a significant tax base, are struggling, and they like a little bit of money wherever they can get it. So we need to keep that in mind with future legislation. Thank you.
Thank you. Senator George.
Mr. Chairman, thank you. I think I would like everyone to remember that 2% of a bigger number does not hurt those cities. And that's what you're going to be seeing in revenue.
Senator Cruz.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I want to thank Aaron and the governor's office for bringing this forward. 10% would be wonderful, wouldn't it? But let's take what we've got. I'm going to be very interested, Mr. Chair, in the performance measures and how those roll out. I think that's absolutely critical to the success of this. It's very seldom that I go against cities or counties, but this is targeted money that goes back to counties anyway. So, and the impact on cities, I think long term, it's going to ease a burden for them. And Mr. Chair, you know, this stuff's very personal with me. And I'm glad to see us getting back in this direction. We've got some other bills dealing with foster care and treatment in that arena, and so this is a piece. This is just a piece, and I think we're moving in a proper direction on several fronts, and this is a good starting place.
Thank you. Carla just reminded me of the relief nursery. Judge Ann Egan said one time that, you know, it's time to go upstream and solve the problem. And that's what Relief Nursery does with children who are being abused, or children who are just being neglected, or children who are not getting the right kind of start. And I think going upstream is important on this issue, too, because we need to deal with the problem at the beginning of it and try to offset that horrendous cost shift. The city of Springfield has, you know, they're building a 100-bed jail to deal with the problems that we're having in my city. A lot of the problems come from the very topic that we're talking about today, and I see it all the time. And Springfield is not unique, but their solution is the jail. I think this is a small amount, but it does address that front end, and I think that's what we really have to do. So, okay, so with that, we will... we've closed the public hearing. We're in a work session, and would you call the roll, please?
Senator Monica Anderson?
Aye.
Senator Berger?
Excused.
Senator George?
Aye.
Vice Chair Curry?
Aye.
Chair Morissette?
Aye. Okay, Senate Bill 184 passes to the floor of the House with an enthusiastic, to the floor of the Senate with an enthusiastic, and I will carry the bill. But what I'm thinking, going to Ways and Means, darn. Okay. I was thinking of the House bill, I guess that's going to be following later, but this, now tell me why it's going to Ways and Means.
Let's have fiscal. Okay. Mr. Chair, we're going to need to back up a little bit then and amend the motion.
I would entertain an amendment to
Mr. Chair, I would like to, number one, does the committee agree to withdraw their votes at this point in time? They do, so votes are withdrawn. Mr. Chair, I would like to amend the motion by adding with a subsequent referral to the Committee on Ways and Means. So we're still going to the floor with a subsequent referral to the Committee on Ways and Means.
Okay. We'll deal with that. Okay. The motion has been made to amend the previous motion to say with a subsequent referral to Ways and Means, which will mean that it will go to the floor first, then to Ways and Means.
Yeah, that's standard. That's okay. The way you make the motion, and it just bounces to Ways and Means, never actually hits the floor. Just that puts it at the president's desk,
okay.
And then he moves it.
Wait just a minute now.
That's
right. Okay. Okay. That's right. Let's stand down for just a minute because this is a wording.
What are you doing?
No, I'm serious. Go ahead. That's part of your motion.
You want
the bill will go to.
Okay, you want me to ask the president to rescind?
We want the president to rescind. Okay, go ahead and do the subsequent referral, and we'll throw in the rescinding of the by the president.
You want to get me in trouble with
yes.
Peter? Is that
yes.
What you're trying to do?
You're just making the motion.
Roll the tape.
Okay, the proper motion at this point, we're starting from square one.
Okay.
There's nothing on the table.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Mr. Chair, I move Senate Bill 184 to the floor with a due pass recommendation with a subsequent referral to Ways and Means, and request that the President consider
rescinding
the subsequent referral. Is that what you want?
Yes, that's what I want.
Okay.
You know, I used to do crazy motions when I had the gavel, but I don't know.
Do we have that? Okay. Do you understand the motion?
Yeah, we've done this before.
Yeah, we've done it before.
Yeah.
See?
Okay. Just for the record, you know, the chair asked me to do this, Peter, so it's...
Okay. And Senator Montesanderson said we've done it before, so there. Would you call the roll?
The woman every time.
Senator Bruce.
Excuse.
Senator George.
Aye.
Senator Montesanderson.
Aye.
Vice Chair Cruz.
Aye.
Chair
Morissette. Aye. The bill passes a second time. And we'll go. And hopefully we'll end up on the floor, and I will carry the bill if it makes it onto the floor quickly. Thank you very much. Okay. Other business before the committee? Seeing no other business before the committee is adjourned.
Now, you could ask him.